thank you all for coming once again. As I said before, maybe a couple people came in. My name is Brent Hallman. I'm a former president of Milwaukee Makerspace. I spent 2 years in the thick of it. Tom did as well. There's a couple other people throughout here. Thank you all for coming from your groups. I know it was kind of short notice. We tried to promote it. It got on some social media and some Facebook and other things, but not everywhere. So the types of questions we've got, if you've gotten a copy of the agenda, are things to basically kind of share, like, we want to learn from each other. One of the great things about makerspaces and other community groups is you can learn from each other. You don't necessarily have to make the same mistakes over and over. You can share your triumphs, the challenges, how you overcame them. At Milwaukee Makerspace, we like to think we're not like the only group that's ever done this before. We know we're not. We've stolen things from Hack Factory. We've stolen things from Sector 67 and all sorts of great ideas. Some places have, you know, copied parts of our wiki and website. We've copied parts of theirs. So that's kind of the purpose of this meeting, is to share those ideas in kind of a face-to-face setting. So the first topic, how did your space get started? Yes?
I'm not going to answer that.
That's fine.
And first, what I would like to know is, can we get a quick show of hands of who is currently an active member in a makerspace? Raise your hand.
Okay.
Who has ever visited a makerspace? Raise your hand. Cool. All right. Who has never heard the term makerspace before this weekend? Raise your hand.
Awesome. Smart.
And yet they found their way in here.
Okay. So, first topic. How did your space get started? Any takers? First one out of the gate.
Do you want to just run around the room quick and everybody has a sentence to...
We can do that, yeah. Like, who are you and what group are you affiliated with, or what are you looking to do here? Yourself.
So this row, we're all flies on the wall listening to what you guys have to say because we want to get involved in a makerspace.
Okay. And what's your, like, geographical location?
Brookfield.
Yeah. Wonderful. Ever heard of Spring City Launchpad? Or no? Okay. That was another one that was trying to hit, like, Waukesha area.
Yeah, I just moved here a couple months ago.
Yourself, sir.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Pomeroy from Madison. Not currently involved in makerspace. Know about it in Madison. I'm just interested in a West Side location, close to where I live. So yeah, we're seeing, you know, kind of exploring things.
Yeah. Yourself.
I'm Alicia Wazarski. I'm in Cudahy. I'm in Cudahy. So Bayview is actually the closest space, but I haven't visited yet, but I'm still interested in going over there. But I just have a lot of things going on.
Wonderful. No, we get that a lot. We just had doors open. And there's people who are like, I've been meaning to come in, and then they find it the weekend or whatever. So,
are the days that normally are
Tuesdays, 7 p.m., okay. And there's like other assorted times and there's events and such, but Tuesdays. Go ahead. Yes.
I'm Karen from the Boundary in Madison. We're 2+ years old. We're the second makerspace in Madison. And I guess I can answer your question, sort of. So we came about because there's another makerspace in Madison, and they tend to be more engineering and business incubator focused. And we wanted something that was a little more community and tinkerer focused, hobbyist. So that's why we exist.
Same.
John Ike, Boundary. Zach Zeman, I'm Columbia Gadget Works. We're a small makerspace in mid-Missouri. And we've survived, I think, 6 years now through the creation and destruction of, I think, 3 other makerspaces.
Nice.
So we just keep chugging.
In the back.
I'm Drew Pistini from Pony Station 1 in Chicago. I help run an embedded systems meetup there every other Monday night.
Yourself, sir?
I'm Ed. I live in Burlington. Just interested in how one gets
started. Go ahead.
Jay, I started my first space 8 years ago, Workshop 88. I'm with some friends, and I run Space Lab and the space out of DePaul University as well.
And where is this?
Chicago. Oh, sorry, Chicago area.
So, Adam Turner, I work for the Navy. We're trying to make fab labs on bases, so I just came here to figure out stuff that happens.
For actual projects and things that are related to the armed services, or people's, like, recreation?
Both.
Okay, cool. Same?
Well, I'm his wife, so I just take along.
Like, you're a person, you're, well, allowed to speak up, so thank you.
I'm Josh Colts. I'm from the Idea Studio at the Fond du Lac Public Library, so it's a public library based makerspace.
Didn't mean to just jump right in on you, but we're going around just doing brief introductions.
Sure. Dennis Duchesne, and I'm working with the Pleasant Prairie Mini Maker Fair that they plan at Thanksgiving weekend.
Yes. Mike.
My name is Mike Putnam. I'm from Appleton at the Appleton Makerspace. We've been around since about 2008, getting together in people's kitchens, and now we have a building and members, so that's good.
And a website of Maker Cams.
Yes.
Don't you guys run that?
Oh. Webcams.
Webcams?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. We slapped together the webcam page.
Yeah.
That's not nothing.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. Yeah, hi. I'm from the Western Suburbs of Chicago. We've had a space for about 3 years since we were at the Milwaukee Maker Fair in 14. And now we're looking to expand programming. And it's a community-based environment.
Cool.
Thank Which town?
Western Springs.
Okay.
Dale Butel. I'm out of Grays Lake, Illinois. We're a non-for-profit trying to open a makerspace in Lake County.
Dennis Rocco, I'm with Proto in Green Bay, and we're more of a youth-focused makerspace, concentrating more on projects and workshops. We're not exactly open to membership yet.
We need those, because there's a lot of people that are interested in doing stuff with kids, and we keep having to kind of show them to other museums in the area. But
oh man, I can talk for hours on it, but yeah. it's something. But we're located in our Brown County Central Library. We're not actually a part of the library, but they're completely awesome and helpful.
You take a desk sometimes, and then this desk over here other days.
No, they had a vacant third floor.
Oh, did they? Said, that, okay, that worked out
for it. Okay. So it's incredible.
Tom.
My name is Tom Growlowitz. I'm one of the founders of Milwaukee Makerspace. We started with a dozen people hanging out at a Culver's trying to figure out how to do this and ponied up enough money as when you're dues to actually rent a building and get things started. And once we had a space, the thing just bloody well exploded.
All right, next question. We're on number two. What are your members' interests and kind of have they changed over time? Some groups are more into rocketry or ham radios or robots or woodshop or whatever. So. Anybody that wants to jump in? Why did your group start?
Well, I mean, I would say yes, our group has changed. The interest has changed over time. Right now, it's probably the street that's one of the most diverse it's been, where we've got a bunch of people in robotics, CNC, 3D printing, and just got a laser cutter, and so we've had people messing with that. But for probably a good 6 months, we could have been described as the quadcopter club, because we were, everybody was building them, buying them, like playing with them. And it's just, it kind of goes through phases of that for sometimes. One person gets into something and everyone else is like, whoa, that's cool. And so they kind of follow. And other times it's just sorted out.
We did that when we started the Milwaukee space, as we got our building and we didn't plan it. We didn't say this goes here or that goes there. We just said, okay, here's a building. What do people want? And yeah, the laser cutters have turned out to probably be the biggest draw, the most popular tool. But we've had areas pop up, everything from pottery to tons of 3D printing.
Blacksmithing.
We had a separate classroom. I walked in one day. There were suddenly women at the space with sewing machines and stuff, and now we've got a craft lab. I think it really makes a difference to be flexible and not have a floor plan that you're trying to match. If you just say, okay, what do people want to do, and have a board or someone running it that allocates space and adjusts it as time goes by. We're shrinking areas, we're expanding areas.
We notice a difference between, we have a guest policy. Once a week we're open to the public and guests can come in and use most of our tools, not some of the coolest ones, but most of our tools for free. And the woodshop is all guest available. So for our guests, I would say woodshop and crafts are huge. Crafters are a hard, hard demographic to catch membership for, because for us, I mean, you know, they don't need the expensive tools like a lot of people, so paying the membership dues isn't the same. But we get them, I hope, on the social side. So Monday night's craft night, we get a lot of crafters coming for that. And then for our members, I mean, laser cutter, man. First tool to get, I swear to God, because you know, people just don't have them in their home versus a 3D printer they probably do. But
and they're
yeah,
very
so a lot
versatile.
Of the CNC stuff is where we're getting the members' interest.
It's amazing how often someone says, oh, can I do this with the CNC router? And we say, no, go use the laser cutter. You can have it done in 2 minutes.
Well, and also, I think there's value to having a tool that nobody ever uses, but it still sounds cool.
we had
I
that.
I know this sounds weird, but like the laser cutter is like, ooh, laser cutter. And then if you really track how many people actually use it, it's sort of a dedicated core.
Yeah.
But everybody likes being part of a space where there's a laser cutter.
We had that with the KUKA robot for 4 years.
Yeah.
It never got used. It was a robotic arm out of a factory. And it just sat there with one guy trying to make it work, and everybody, oh, you've got a robot arm, that's so cool, but nobody ever did anything with it.
I lived in Madison. Baudry is how I got interested in makerspaces.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the laser cutter. You guys hosted a meetup, like, learn how to do a laser cutter. And I've been talking about it ever since.
Well, come back and let us know when you get one.
Yeah.
We'd love to see pictures.
What kind of materials do they usually cut on the laser cutter? I mean, I know it's got different capabilities based on power, but what do they usually use it for?
Acrylic is your biggest, acrylic and thin plywood. You can take the plastic acrylic you buy at Home Depot, and they actually have sheets that are the right size to drop right into the laser cutters.
Okay.
It's expensive, though. The other one that's really popular is Baltic birch, quarter inch thick or eighth inch thick plywood, and you can buy that at like Rockler or Kettle Moraine Hardwoods. The other thing we found is there's somewhere in your city that there's a plastics company that wholesales thousands of sheets of stuff, and they also do fabrication. Go and talk to them, go and show them your blog, go and be nice to them. There's a place in Milwaukee called Midland Plastics. They've got a little outlet store for their cutoffs. And we walk in there and say, we're with Milwaukee Makerspace. And they go, fill your arms and it's $20. Have a nice day.
1 minute warning.
The one in Madison doesn't do that.
They don't have an outlet store?
They're very nice. They love us. Blah, blah, blah. But their cutoffs are more expensive than if you just bought per square inch. If you just bought
Wow.
A sheet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you got the wrong kind of place.
Yeah.
That's where you've got to get the Midnight Dumpster Crew going.
And also, I would say crafters have discovered the laser cutter for leather, felt, templates for, you know, cutting out your
stencils, spray paint stencils, all sorts of stuff. So we made gears on the bloody thing for the giant clock we had out here last year.
What about cardboard on a laser cutter?
Cardboard and paper.
I mean, I've seen a ton of laser cut stuff, but I you know, a lot of people will go, oh, that's a fire waiting to happen.
Fire extinguisher right next to it.
Yeah. And you adjust the power so it doesn't flare up. We had a guy cut the entire map of Milwaukee down to the block level out of a sheet of paper. It's hanging on the wall in our laser cutter room.
We're doing a model with kids in three phases of building a model of downtown Green Bay. And we're using phase three as kind of a fundraiser to buy a laser cutter, saying the kids aren't going to be able to cut this with a Zapco. We need
the
money.
Spend the money to buy a good one. Don't buy a cheap one.
Okay. Next topic.
I'll take it.
Sorry to interrupt. I'm going to be doing this trick. Give us on topic.
In
5 minutes and 15 topics, 5 minutes per topic, it'll be about 75 minutes. So, what's the community around your group like? Have you got businesses, industry, schools? Where are people coming from? What groups do you buy things from?
In Appleton, Wisconsin, we have a number of manufacturing companies local to our facility. Yep, Miller, being a prime example, that has donated a welder and some safety equipment to us. We also have a senior center not far from us, so we have a few retirees that are very active in the wood shop that keeps that interest high at our makerspace. There's also a number of software companies. There's a few software companies, so there's a community of people that come just to talk computers and software for our immediate area.
Make the retirees welcome. We've discovered that about our place too. You get a guy who's been doing machining or woodworking for 100 years and he's bored, and this is where someone will sit there and listen to him talk. And you know, it's great to entertain him, but man, there's a ton of knowledge to pick up there.
How do you motivate those people?
You let them play.
Well, I mean, how do you connect with them? I mean,
you got to get them out there and show them, and then you got to ask them questions. Well, you know, we're trying to do this, or how did you do that, or back in the day, what did they use for this? Get them wound up.
We've had some luck with things like that. Doors Open Milwaukee, where we put our building on the list 3 years ago, so this was our third year doing it.
Find excuses to get the
public in. Even if you don't get the people that will eventually become members, you'll get the people like, I have to tell my dad about this, I have to tell my mom, my sister, my brother, whoever, you know, my spouse. They'll come through. And maybe it's not for them, but word of mouth is worth it to our goal.
The other thing that's, can I just speak as a potential user? And so the other thing is retirees, some of the technology, the computer technology is a little bit challenging. And so seeing all these cool machines that actually there's a barrier to using the computer technology is a problem. So there's all these like cool devices, but then it's like, all right, well, I have this idea in my head. How do I get it to happen?
I can't use the interface, or I'm not familiar with, you know, what vector files are or whatever. So,
although they're also the machinists and the crafters.
Yeah.
We have a manual lathe that none of us really know how to do well. So we desperately need a machinist, and that's who we're looking at, is seniors to come in and, I mean, you know, guys have been machinists most of their lives or whatever, to come in and teach us how to use it. And crafters, I mean, the senior crafters, holy crap, they know how to do it.
Do you guys like kind of incentivize trying to get them in? Like for us, I mean, we're doing so much with youth. If we find an adult that has an interest in being there, that has some skills, we just kind of say, come on in, play. You know, you don't hit them with a membership fee right away. We invite them in because we want them to be an aspiration for the kids. So
we have a senior discount, half our membership rates, which we already, our rates were set lower than usual in Madison. And also we do workshops. We take 20% for the space of the take. We use a suggested donation, and then the presenters get 80%. So that's an incentive for them to teach classes.
We've done some stuff like that. We've had to back off because we've got space problems and too many paying members. We're also self-funded. But if the money isn't a big issue, offering a free membership to someone if they'll teach you a class or do a class once a month, that's how to get them coming back.
Right.
I would say that we're right across from a school and a block away from another school, and we're actually in a church which had extra space at a very affordable rate, and so that's been, and lots of parking, because there's lots of parking around both of those entities.
Something else that, like, I've been trying to get through my students, I teach at the Navy base as well, is trying to get, like, certifications. I don't know, like, I know a lot of certifications for, like, electronics and stuff, like fiber optics, you have to actually do projects. Maybe you can open up to, like, some other, like, ETA, Electronic Technician Association, like, getting proctors that actually do the projects, maybe?
I've seen some places where, like, a great example would be getting your ham radio license, operator's license.
Right.
So, maybe, like, the space wouldn't necessarily put on the class, but there's a member who wants to study with other people, or it's a location where they could have someone come in and proctor the exam for
right.
people.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
So, just kind of facilitating it. Anyone else? Got about a minute left. We can just move on. Okay.
I would say, though, just engagement is a really big issue. We've noticed that, so we started out with 4 members, and then we were kind of in that 20 range for a while, for about our first year. Now we're at 63, and it has changed. I mean, you guys are 260, so. And we've noticed the difference between when we were 20 scrappy people and 60 plus of us. That it starts, your community starts to feel more disparate. It feels like a mall that you go shop at versus your clubhouse.
Yeah.
And so trying to keep your volunteers, your area captains engaged is something that we're now trying to bring that back in, and then trying to get people to come and teach things. How do we incentivize them? And I think, you know, you talk about cost, I think really the return on investment, really, you think about it as far as you give somebody a discount on their membership or a free membership, but then now you've got a space that's got those things happening regularly, or it's organized and clean, and so that attracts more members. And if they go there and they're like, this place is kind of jumped up, like not a lot going on, you know, kind of disorganized.
I think activity and progress is like the biggest thing. The one thing we've noticed at Milwaukee Makerspace is, you know, if there's a group project or there's a space project, you know, something that's going on that's going to benefit multiple people.
Yeah.
If the board and other groups are, you know, people in general are more forgiving if it's showing a little progress every now and then rather than if it sits for like a month.
Yeah.
And people get really kind of antsy when they're like, I have a project that I would be working on, but that's taking up space. So maybe a little off topic, but yeah.
Do you push people that kind of are letting things lag?
That's part of what we have with the board is there's policies and things. We really try to incentivize people to finish and, you know, help
charge
them
for floor space if it's not getting work done.
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard to get that enforced, but it's in the rules.
Yeah.
We went through those phases and we learned a lot early on. We were fighting to find members and had all sorts of discounts and encouragements and all that stuff. We hit that critical point where suddenly we actually had to drop all of our discounts, but our solution was to drop all of the dues to the discounted rate. so nobody could wine, and we still had one winer.
That kind of goes right in. Yeah.
But what happens is once you get to that 60 or 70, suddenly somebody there knows how to do everything. The funniest thing we had is we were in the middle of stuff and we made a wish list of tools. And I says, well, why don't we post that to the message board? And a week later, we had all those tools in hand.
Yeah.
Because everybody had them sitting in the garage. I didn't know you needed that. I didn't know somebody else wanted to play with that. I thought that was just me. So that communication and getting it out there. The biggest thing that we've done, the thing that has done the most for us, is a blog and putting stuff that people are making on it all the time. If you want to hire somebody, your best investment is a professional blogger. Get stuff out there every week and people will find you.
You all have cheese.
Yeah, we do. And Carl.
Pete and Carl, yeah.
Next up, just because I want to keep moving on. It kind of rolls into that, though. What does it cost to be a member of your group? Like, what's a price? I can start Makerspace right now. It's $40 a month, 24/7 access. And then you can get a second key if you've got a spouse, somebody in your household, family, whatever, for 10 bucks. They don't get any additional storage. With your $40, you get basically a shelf or a locker, like a small space, but what do other people charge? What do you guys do?
We do $30 a month, 24/7 access. We don't have, we've been talking about doing that, some sort of family or spousal membership, but we haven't reported on that in a month. Just $30 a month flat rate, one membership level.
If you haven't got a space right now, but you're thinking of one, what have your thoughts been so far? What have you heard from other people? What have you thought yourself?
We had a really interesting meetup in ours where we had a lot of people and we were trying to figure it out. And we didn't have a lot yet. And there were folks in there that were saying, hey, you're starting something new here. It's going to be a great thing. And I'm willing to fork out $50 a month to be a part of starting that. And we had other guys sitting in there looking around the room going, I'm not giving you 10 a month for this.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, it was so hard, you know, because it's abstract right now, but it's starting to be more concrete. But
you always get those people that usually guys that show up and are like, oh, I got all these tools in my space. Like, yeah, you do all by yourself. Enjoy that.
Exactly.
And as I said just to a guy this morning, you know, that's true. Like, the downside is more people will break your, like, nobody's in your shop breaking your tools, and they do in ours. But there's nobody there to fix them when they break either besides you. So we're $50 a month. We just started some discounts. We started looking around. So senior discounts, we want more seniors in there with their knowledge base, 25. So half price. Students and starving hackers sort of scholarship, 25. And the couple, we were at, so 40 each for a couple. But that $10, I mean, that's nice. One in Loveland, they have a $75. So in other words, it's in this whole family, like kids and stuff. We had to do a kids policy. I don't know if you guys have kids policies, like what you can do.
We could talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, like what you can do with certain tools. We have green, yellow, and red tag tools. Red are the trickiest, most expensive, members only. So can they use red tag tools? And so we just sort of hash that out as a board.
We basically tell like kids, like, oh, stay in the carpeted areas. We have like three parts of our building. And back hallway is mostly storage. There's two big workshops. And we basically tell people the official policy is like 10 and up only. We've had people bring in very mature 8 and 9 year olds, no problem. But 18 and up for members. So you can't be a member if you're under 18.
You can't use a tool if you're not a member.
Right. We have we actually have a more rigid. Ours is no power tools if you're not a member. Yeah. People keep asking, is a soldering iron a power tool?
Mike.
Oh, Appleton Makerspace charges $75 for a family membership. That basically, it's a key per household, 24/7 access. Anybody that lives at that household can get in. $50 for an individual per month and $25 for a student or retiree.
You had to look that up.
I did.
You must have like auto pay setup or something.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah, that'd be a question. How you guys do about collecting members?
We use Stripe.com off our website.
And it's recurring.
Yeah.
Can you do a one-off?
I'm so sick of chasing people.
Picked up something called Wild Apricot. It's a bit more of a hassle, but it's a lot more complete. It allows you to do meeting schedules and classes and pay for classes.
Everybody has like their own splash page that they
yeah,
log into.
Yeah, a member can take care of everything without talking to a single person in terms of paying their dues, getting their key reactivated, whatever.
What do you think?
Doesn't that have also a newsletter option, Wild Africa.
It's really set up as a social group maintenance sort of thing, and it takes care of a lot of the dirty work.
It's used by, like, you know, JCs and yacht clubs and other groups that, you know, you'd have to pay dues for or whatever, and then they do.
I think there's a fee for it, isn't there?
There is. We do pay for it.
Yeah, but for us, it's worth it.
Cobot, COBOT, which is kind of set up towards makerspaces, it's expensive. And there's the Nation of Makers thing that's going on, you know? The White House invited a bunch of makerspace organizers to go there, and they've been there's something called Odoo, O-D-O-O, that's more robust, but so it's free open source, and a couple makerspaces are getting together to build a module for makerspaces, for membership dues and all that stuff.
Yes.
What do you guys do, like, for people that, like, aren't wanting to work on, like, a project for themselves, but, like, just want to volunteer their time to help somebody else? Do you guys still charge for that kind of stuff? Or?
As long as they're not using tools, yeah, they can be a guest of a current member.
Okay.
Yeah,
a lot of that for us is dancing around the insurance and liabilities issues.
Yeah, I was about to say, how do you get
in theory, every guest who walks in the door signs a waiver saying, I promise not to sue you. Yeah. Every member signs the same thing. But that's why we drew the line at 18, just figure keep it simple.
What's your insurance company think you are?
We found a West Bend Mutual Insurance actually understood the concept of a makerspace, has us insured as a makerspace. These guys have been absolutely outstanding. Everybody else was quoting us $3,000 or $4,000 a year. And these guys got us off the ground for, I think, $500 or $600 the first year. It's gone up a bit since then. We've got bigger. But, yeah, West Bend Mutual Insurance.
How much a year?
I think we're like $800 last year. It's been a while since I checked
it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. These and they know what a makerspace is. They found a company that'll underwrite it.
Yeah. Ours thinks we're a tech school.
Yeah, we were an artist workshop for the longest time.
So they didn't mind, like, the minors? They didn't mind about that? They're, of course, good minors. They're a school.
Yeah. Well, we weren't a non-profit when we first signed up as insurance.
Yeah.
So it's hard to call yourself a school or anything like that if you aren't really set up as a non-profit.
What did kill us was drones. Insurance companies are freaked out about drones. We had three companies drop us before they even knew us because we happened to have a drone posting on our blog.
Yeah.
And they saw it, they're like, no way. Really,
it's new and scary. It's new and scary. They didn't even have the rules in place then.
So I'm going to go to the next question. how do you determine who is and is not a current member? That can go into the software. That can go into, like, just keeping track of people and keys. I mean, it's a tricky situation, but I'd be curious to hear what you guys have dealt with. Or
I guess we need clarification. Are you talking about, like, our badge or our key fob system?
Yeah.
Okay, so Milwaukee Makerspace, when you sign up, you get an RFID tag that lets you into the building. And at the moment, that's pretty much the only thing governing who gets in there.
The average member walking in saying, hey, are you a member? Like, other people, it's got the honor system. And it's
everything else is honor system, including using tools by non-members or whether or not you're checked off on a tool. We're really kind of lax.
We have the same situation.
Just building keys. We keep talking about putting key fob access to some of the machines, and nobody ever gets around to doing it.
It's amazing how people talk about stuff a lot.
There's always the. You guys should.
Yes.
You can't build a reputation on that.
You're attracting idea people to the space. They're going to have ideas. Speaking of ideas, that's why they need to belong to me.
Well, that's as we're building our board, they say, wealth and work.
The phrase I've uttered.
I'm going to recognize it. Go ahead, sir.
I said, whether you do it or not would be based on your liability.
Yeah.
And whether or not you expect somebody to actually violate that policy and get hurt. If you see it waiting toward that direction, then I would go ahead and make an effort to do it.
You do like a tag on
guest to your place because I'm with the Monster Next Group.
Yeah.
One day we meet over at the county bus place, and one day we showed up, and there was a new guard. He didn't recognize any of the members.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks that worked there didn't show up. We couldn't get a hold of them. So one of the guys was a member of your place, and he said, well, I'm a member. They said that I can have guests.
I think I remember that day. Yeah. There were a couple people with, like, well, where did they come from? Like, what's the whole group? But it was fine.
There's a table in the middle. There were some other people sitting at the table down at the end. And
usually we're, like, a little bit more noticed, but that's an emergency situation, obviously, you know.
Yeah,
you've got a group of people.
Otherwise, we would have had to cancel.
I'm glad we were able to help you.
Each member is allowed to host a meeting, a class, once a month. If they do more than that, nobody whines because it's not a big issue. If things start getting busy, we'd start doing something about it.
Yeah.
But we were talking before, the most common phrase that I have uttered since joining a makerspace is, yes, that's a great idea, why don't you start doing it? Because the biggest problem is everybody's full of ideas, but nobody has the time to implement them.
I met a guy who said their makerspace is a duocracy.
Yeah.
If you decide to do something, if you do it, you've made the decision.
Don't tell me how to do it, tell me how you're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I look forward to seeing how you work that out.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's most makerspaces operate is what they call a duocracy.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some pitfalls to that, but for the most part, it works.
And I think it's different too. So again, the difference between 260 plus members and we're finding is 60 members. I used to know all our members by sight, by name, and now there's people. I'm like, I think he's a member. I'm not sure. We have a photo board up with all our members. We take their photos. You guys have an electronic one, right?
We tried that. We don't maintain it as well as we'd like to.
Yeah.
Always more work.
Again, someone needs to maintain it. Nobody's willing to step up and do it.
Yeah. Plus, nobody wants to be that person who like goes to look at the board and like, oh, okay, you're cool.
You can be a little more discreet than that, possibly. But yeah.
Hey, did you get a haircut?
Yes.
I know.
The big thing for us with the photo board was just kind of like, hey, you need to go to talk about blank. You know, about 3D printing. You need to see Steve. You need to go to this guy for training. And people are like, I have no idea who he looks like or what she looks like. It's like, we start describing, it's the tall, bald guy with glasses that knows everything.
Oh, hey!
So, you know, it's the other tall skin. Somebody did that actually, doors open. They were looking for somebody that they had spoken with earlier in the day. And I took them around about 4 different people, and I still have no clue who they were describing.
You're right, our photo board gets used for that all the time. Yeah. Like, oh, so-and-so is the area captain, they're right there.
Yeah, that's
talk
useful.
Talk to this person about Arduinos, talk to that person. Yeah, photo board. And it always weirds people out. We take their picture when they become a member. Like, what are you doing this for? Like, we put you on the board, we send an announcement around all the members saying, welcome to Ben, who just started, and here's things he likes and doesn't like, and, you know.
Do you track, like, skills, interests, and all that, and that same board space?
We ask for the information, we don't track it.
It's a ton of work to maintain. We've asked members to set up wiki pages for themselves and list that sort of stuff, and nobody really has time to do that. People come to Makerspace because they want to build shit.
Right.
They don't want to do all the overhead and the paperwork. You know, if you can find somebody who likes doing
that,
like the king of signs over here.
You're the sign guy?
He's the sign king. He loves to put signs on stuff. Oh, we'll rent him out. Screw Borrow.
Did you see how long I hung out at the Brady table? I thank them every year.
Oh.
I go steal their radiation signs, their fire door, please keep clear. Like, I talk to them, I'd love to work for them, but like, there's really nothing there that would challenge me, unfortunately.
Finding a couple members with the right fetishes will take you a long way. He's worth his weight in gold. He likes to put signs on stuff.
I'm not even joking.
I know.
Anytime you want to come and like, help us organize things with signs.
I will gladly okay, what do you guys need? Like, I'll spend a day doing this, and I got no problem doing that.
Awesome.
Because I enjoy the hell out of it. I like using laser grid. I made a giant, like, 24x18 board just for the hack rack, like, one of our many hack racks that has appliances and computers on it. And just, like, here's the things we like. Here's the things we hate. And here's my photo. Like, I'm the guy you want to talk to if you got a question. Don't leave it here. Don't put, you know, jacuzzi pump that doesn't work. We don't want that. Your CRT TV, don't even bother. But inkjet printers, I'm going to smack you if you bring one in, but there you go. So, but yeah, things like that. There are good steppers in there, but the problem is we've gotten so many and we've taken them all apart.
They're too small to be useful. We like bigger steppers.
Yeah, stuff you could use for, you know, CNC Mogul or something.
Yeah.
Next topic. How many members do you currently have? We kind of touched on this a little bit. I've heard some people started with 20, some people now have 60. Makerspace started with maybe like 10 really hardcore people, and then like 5 to 10,
13 founding members.
13 founding members, of which Tom and I are two. And then we had, about 5 people that joined like the minute the group actually opened and paid for memberships. And then from there kind of grew. When we moved, the big thing was when we moved from the one building to the one we're currently in, I think we had about 45, 50, and Have Blue, one of our current members, was not a member at the time. He had known everybody since even before there was a makerspace being discussed.
We finally got him to join. Just because he's like, I'm here all the time, I want a key. I'm tired of not being able to get in. So, like, that was a win for us. We were like, wow, you know. So, he's actually the one now with the plane, if anybody's seen the plane.
Yeah, there. Yeah.
But, yeah, so we're at 245. I've heard that number's not accurate. It's more like 250.
It bounces up and down every month.
Yeah, the first week of every month is off because some people haven't paid yet, the grace period and such. But what are some other people?
That's a lot. Is that sort of like the exercise facility where, you know, really only 50 are currently?
Yeah, there's a core so. Like a good 20, 30 people that are there maybe once a week or once every 2-3 days. And then there's like maybe another 50 to 100 people that pop in once a week, maybe.
Okay.
Our meetings have gone from anywhere from like, we used to post our entire meeting agendas and the notes on our blog because that was all that was going on. And that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And now, if we did that every week, there'd just be this ton of information. It's 30 to 40 people a week now we have at meetings.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guests, usually about 5 to 10 guests. And I mean, I'd like to actually be able to figure out our attrition rate, but it's not much. I mean, that's why the number just keeps going up.
I'm not actually sure of the real numbers, but I want to say in the mid-30s to 40 right now.
And how big is space?
We're like 2,000 or 3,000 square feet. It's a weird shape.
Yep. Yeah, we're 3,400. You guys are about
square feet or members?
I'm square feet.
I'm say that's a city.
Sorry.
I'm guessing, but I think it's like 22.
I'll
I think it's around 800 square feet. We have 17 members. 17 paying members on like probably around 25 people who will be showing up at meetings.
Friends of the space.
Yeah. And then like of the core members, like there's probably maybe 6 of us that are there every week.
Yeah, it's a pretty big space, right?
We're 60,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We really lucked out, and thankfully Tom's like worked with real estate, and he has some friends that would
got friends in
throw
local
money
places.
At it.
And yeah, yes. Shop is just a lot more kinetic.
Behind
you go in their place though, they're starting to.
Yeah.
We could go, I'd like to talk to the Brookfield people about an expansion.
Yeah.
We allow a lot more member storage than we do.
We do.
Yeah.
We've been
clamping down a lot on that, which I think is bad, because if you've got your stuff there, you're more likely to work than you are to work at home.
I've been to like Sin Shop in Vegas, and like they have the locker, and I'm like, we should have been doing that since the beginning, but unfortunately we have people working on cars and motorcycles and the Ford Ranger electric conversion and what?
And boats.
And boats.
We noticed last year, so we were probably around 30 members and trying to grow. We were all in the, yeah, let's do that. Do whatever you want. That's cool. You want to be a member? We love you. And you guys were in the face of like, stop doing that. Stop doing that. Don't do that anymore.
We crossed that line. Yeah.
Yeah.
We went from the, we've got a huge building. Let's fill it.
We didn't cross it. We ran across it. We were on a jet-powered car.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was a big change.
We did get rid of doing electric car conversions at the space. We had somebody that had a convertible Saab that they were working on, and it was one of those projects that just sat there with no progress for months.
Yeah.
And it's now our metal casting area because there's more people that will enjoy that rather than one person's car.
It's tough decisions to make, but someone's got to, you got to step up and kick people out, you know, and throw the projects out sometimes. Most people are good about it and figure it out, but occasionally it's a little tough.
We're at time for that one.
Did the boat get finished?
It's still being
No, it was supposed to be here at this Maker Faire, and he missed this
yeah,
one again.
He's
a damn perfectionist. What are you going
to
do?
If you come to the space for the mixer party after the, you know, today, you'll see it.
Okay.
It's pretty far old.
Because I remember at Maker Fest, I think, was the first time
I
saw it.
They flipped it over. It was the whole side up, and now it's, so you'd like sit in it.
It looks like it's done, but he says it is.
He should charge people for photos sitting in it. How do you acquire tools and materials? People just bring stuff in, members just bring their stuff, or people buy things, or?
We've bought, with like due funds, we've bought like 2 tools that we found we needed, and otherwise, yeah, it's all been member knowledge.
Do you ever purchase any tools?
It's all member knowledge.
Have you got donations from?
Kind of patrons is what I call them, you know, members who have resources, but partnerships with like you guys with Milwaukee,
so jealous.
That builds.
Yeah.
Appleton has been largely member donations. A few items were group purchase, other makerspace loans, and a few community donations.
What kind of donations?
That was like the Miller.
Materials?
Yeah, well, some materials as well.
Yeah. Welder?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and thanks to Milwaukee Makerspace. They gave us a welding table. Well, a welding table and a CNC router.
Is that the one Tully got spray painted on?
The CNC? Oh, no, that was still here.
Okay.
We did ours as what we're calling loans to the space. So you still own the tool, but you're leasing it to the space indefinitely for no money.
Yeah.
We wanted to do that partly so that there's somebody who's responsible for the tool, and also that in theory there's somebody that knows how to use it and can train other people. But I keep buying stuff at auctions I have no idea how to use and bring
it
to the space.
Joe did that too with what was the other thing, the induction furnace?
I did that. That was mine.
What was the one Joe bought?
Plasma cutters, maybe? I don't know.
No, he knows what he does. He had something else he bought and brought in. He's like, I have no idea how to use this. Somebody teach me.
Yeah. Or let's take it apart.
Yeah.
So I have a question about...
Yes.
You mentioned, area captains, but do you require every new member to go through a general safety course when they join, or an annual safety course?
We have
Do you cover safety in every week?
We have an orientation class. We expect, anybody that owns their tools, when they train other people who are our area champions, to focus on safety. We mentioned we don't have like a safety certification that everyone has to go through. It's a lot of the honor system, unfortunately. Like, we don't have staff, there's nobody there 24/7 or even 9-to-5. So, if somebody's going to use a tool, they have to take responsibility for themselves, which again is liability, it's a risk. There's a lot of signs, there's a lot of things we've put on machines to remind people. Our wood shop is very dusty. We've put up some signs and made masks available and said, look, this is a breathing hazard. You need to be aware of it. We did kind of the same thing as like lockout tags, but we have like some laminated pieces of paper with QR codes that I'm sure no one's ever used that say, hey, here are the hazards. Like, this is a rotating piece of machinery. No loose clothing, no long sleeves, tie your hair back, stuff like that. So we try to get people, but again, it's really on the member themselves to be safe.
We tell most members they can't use a power tool until they've been checked off on it.
Yeah.
Which means somebody who's assigned as a checker for that machine walks it through basic safety.
Sorry, Joe.
Do you
have a
saw stop?
No.
We talk about it quite a bit.
It's a 100-year-old cabinet saw.
Yeah, that's great.
There's people want it.
Takes fingers off like nothing.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah.
Does anyone have staff?
Sector does.
Paid staff or volunteer staff?
Chris.
Yeah, and that's, I think
the benevolent dictator.
I'm speaking for him, but I'm assuming that's why. So there are $100 a month, and I think that's part of his business model that's his job. So. Versus, the rest of us all volunteer.
Yeah. And there's definitely...
We're setting ourselves up to... Because we're creating projects and classes and curriculum and stuff like that. And, this is not going to happen on a volunteer basis. But right now, we're not getting paid.
So I visited ADX in Portland, Oregon. So they have the kind of almost tech shop model. They're higher end. It's costly, designer focused, but they have staff. They do services. So you can go there and say, I want this product made, and they have people there. So that's where you get your kind of pro level members that want to be makers. And then they also become the area captain. So it's kind of a neat model if you can do that, because now they've got staff to make, and the place is gorgeous and it's really nice. But that's so they went all in on that kind of business. They offer a ton of classes that you pay for. They have these services that you can pay for. You can get tutored. They will tutor you by the hour on how to use a certain machine, more than just that, here's how to use it. And so they've just done all of this to generate revenue enough so that they can have full-time staff.
Time.
Okay.
The next question. What sorts of projects do people work on? It should be a fun one.
We have a member, the president, in fact, has an ultralight airplane that has been in the air. That's probably our largest and most interesting one.
Do you guys have a group work on that?
No. But we're on the periphery of it.
help them out if he asks. Other groups? What people want to do?
We do a lot of like robotics teams, mm-hmm. and we're really setting ourselves up as like a tinker shop. We have wood tools and a small CNC and 3D printers, but we're really about, we encourage the whole duct tape, dowels, paper clips type of thing, and get into some general engineering learning through that. So we're really pushing kind of that tinker level activities.
Yeah, folks doing everything.
Do everything?
Less on, because there's two makerspaces in Madison, so Sector has more of a corner on the market with like the robotics, engineers kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
More metalworking, I mean, not quite Milwaukee, but you know, more of the.
Oh, yeah, no, I've been to both yours and theirs.
So. Yeah. So we always say we're the tinkerers and the part timers, and they're the pro makers. Sector, so.
I think when I was there visiting in April, they had a pedal tavern that they were scrapping, working on. And then, one guy was like, oh, yeah, no, I do stuff for, like, NASA. Like, we build battery packs for satellites and this and that. And it's like, if that's what you do for, during the day, you come and tinker around with it at night, great. I'd say Makerspace, we've got, compared to some other spaces I've seen, we're lucky in that we've got a lot of the heavier machinery stuff, the wood shop and metal shop. Whereas some places, especially those that are just starting out, are more laptops, Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, robotics, stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just, I like working with wood, I like working with my hands. We've got a lot of machinists. I think we've lucked out that we've got a bit of the, we're at the north end of the Rust Belt. So there's a factor if we've got people retiring, we've got machines that are being retired. So stuff ends up in our shop and people end up in our shop. But yeah, that 240 people, we've got a lot of interest. Anybody doing power wheels?
Karen.
Yeah. No? Yes?
That's my take on a lot of the projects. And I've done a couple of these where I've done group projects, trying to get more people working with each other. And the power wheels, I think, is a great one because it's a ton of fun. Even if you just get three or four people together to build a car, you'll get enough periphery interest from other members pitching in or sticking a nose in.
Yeah.
Radio Shack, when they still existed, did a hackerspace challenge. I headed the team for that once. And then when I did the giant clock for the fair here last year, I did all those as group teams. And this is my take on it, is if I can find these big projects where I can get a bunch of people involved, I'll tend to stir things up and get people working on things. But the downside of that is you've got to be prepared to do the whole thing yourself, because people can't always finish what they start. What I found works really best is if you can divide it into 1 hour long chunks, so no one has to give you more than an hour to contribute, and then make sure you get their name and put it on a plaque or something at the end. Even if it's just taking a piece of plywood and cutting it down to size for 15 minutes, that's one less thing you have to do. But if you take something and say, well, here's your 30-hour piece, that was the UFO that crashed 2 years ago here. Lance tried to get people to help him out, but he needed 5 or 6 hours at a time to do stuff, and he had a hard time getting people to volunteer. Whereas with the clock, if I kept it in tiny little pieces, I had 35 or 40 people
participating
in building it.
It was a big project, but it was really easy to delegate. I remember coming in, it's like, what can you do? Here, take this box, cut these motors.
Screw these pieces together for me.
Yeah, but it was a big delegate task.
It was. I had to be prepared to basically do the whole thing myself.
Lots of time.
Right, and it turns out I didn't have to put in as much as I thought because I split it down into such tiny pieces.
So you had to be a project leader.
You need somebody in charge. Yeah. You've got to say, this is my idea. And,
Did you spend a lot of time thinking of those pieces you could?
Not really. I actually delegated a lot of that. There's a guy we've got that likes to do CNC stuff, and I had him do the CAD-CAM work for it. And then we cut them out on the CNC router, and I cut some of the gears on the laser cutter with another guy. I showed him what he needed, and he tweaked it and tuned it a little bit, and he gave me good gears. He says, well, I'll do 10 a day until they're all done.
It's kind of cool when you can, work. When I was doing tours and Doors Open last week, we'd have things like, hey, you can 3D print something and then take it and cast it into metal, or you could do something in vinyl with our vinyl cutter. We got a little cameo silhouette. Take that and then use it in the sandblaster to make frosted glassware and stuff. So it's this interdisciplinary sort of thing where you talk to the people that are normally in one area to help you with your project, or somebody will go, like Shane's a great example. People will go to this laser cutter guy we have named Shane, and they'll ask him stuff, and he might run something for them or show them how to do it, but then like he needs somebody in the wood shop to help him with something, so they do that there. It's almost kind of like, what's that, like time banking.
Yeah.
You know, not that formalized.
Not formalized, but they very much so, yeah.
And projects would be cool. I was thinking about, so Karen just made a pedal car, but that involved craft, it involved welding, involved, you know, all the, so it's nice to kind of pull in from the different areas.
Suck the crafters in. I don't care what you're designing or building as a group, get the crafters in to decorate it. That thing we did for Radio Shack, I went to the crafter, I says, we need you to do something. So they made a set of slings that the ball rolled down out of cloth, and then they decorated with little flowers and stuff.
I think crafters make things wonderful. I mean, the rest of the group will make something that works really well and is maybe cool, but they make it wonderful.
Well, the best part about crafters is they like it clean, so they tend to help clean things up for the most part. Well, not when it's grease and grime.
Creative messes.
Yes, it's sort of the creative.
Not when it comes off when the kids touch it. That's the problem.
There's a color coordination to the messes, though.
No, here's the thing about color theory. Anything will go together as long as you put it together.
Yeah. So we've got a couple things here that might kind of be sort of combined, I guess, with things we've already touched on. Are projects mostly done by individuals or groups? We touched on group projects just a little bit. And then does your group have classes? I mean, that's, it could be somewhat related depending on, you know, what site of projects you're doing together. Any standing classes, anybody can be like, every week we do this, or every month we do this.
We have a lot of problems getting classes off the ground where it's like, hey, somebody, and I have to go to somebody and ask, hey, can you do this class? And then 2 weeks before the class, they say, hey, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's happened, I think, three times.
I think the more people you try to get involved with something, the more schedules you have to try to work around.
When you do a class, is it classes of one person teaching to your members, or is it a class where you're bringing people outside of your space in?
Both. Yeah.
I just realized that's a brilliant idea. I used to be a carpenter and into sustainable building stuff, and they would do this thing where they would build like a straw bale home, and then people would take a class and pay to help. So you know, the builder gets the bonus of having the labor done for free.
The vocation vacation.
Yeah, but then the people get to learn how to build a straw bale house. You can do the same thing, so you get your group project as a class. Because we have a ton of people say, I want to take woodworking classes, and I think, God, that's so much. You realize how much, like, how many classes is that woodworking? So, but you could do that. You could figure out a woodworking project or a big project that involves woodworking. Have it be a class. Have it be, you know, every week for 4 weeks, 6 weeks. And then that's your group. And then you come up with something that you create for the space. Yeah. So you could do that in every area of that woodworking and crafting.
We've had some people that have done, right now, I think the one most consistent thing we have is Larry with the Torbach.
Yeah.
So we have a Torbach milling machine, and he...
It's also new. That won't last.
It's also new, yeah. So there's this honeymoon period with it where everybody wants to touch it because it's a new thing. But he has dedicated 3 hours per person to sit and go through it. And I also like to draw the comparison when we teach people on our laser cutter, of which I'm a trainer, you'll make a name tag. So we'll show you, hey, you're going to make a name tag. Sit down, do this, type this in, whatever. We got a little template set up. It gets them familiar with the software, the hardware, using, you know, different materials in the thing, depending on what they want to get their badge out of. Give them some options, limited, but some options. And Larry's doing the same thing with the Torbach, but he's having them mill out a little, like, aluminum thing with their name on it. So at the end of that, he's mounted it up on the wall on a plank of wood. We've just started our second piece of wood because it's got, like, over 15 names on it or whatever now.
That way you know who's trained on the machine.
Yeah, you may not know who the heck the name is with the face, but like you can look at it and it's usually pretty obvious who hasn't been around there.
Yeah.
That's your list for who can use the tool.
Yeah.
That was Larry's idea. That was brilliant. The other guy who helped start this, Royce, was really big on, we're going to give classes. We even have a structure set up where, you know, you can teach a class, you can charge for a class. We ask that you give 5% of the space. We don't have squat for classes because you need somebody who wants to teach the class for class to happen. Without that, you can't cajole someone into doing it for you. And unless somebody really wants to teach the class, they just don't happen. But the ton of one-on-one or three-on-one just hang out and do stuff happens all the time.
We have our mailing list also, our Google group and Facebook and other things. And people will post up there like, hey, I want to get trained on blank. And that'll snowball into three or four people also getting trained on blank. So then it's like, hey, everybody show up Thursday at 6:30 or on the weekend or whatever. And, you know, okay, I'll run you through some tools in the woodshop or metal shop or whatever. Someone wants to get trained on the screen printer, how do you use it? Some of those interactions, I'd say 80% of them are one-on-one. But every now and then there's like five people that are like, yeah, I've been meaning to get checked off on that and I have an opening in my schedule. That's kind of to combat, you know, somebody that tries to set something up well in advance and then it falls through. Be flexible enough that if someone's got an hour sometime, some people can just jump on that. And that's, I mean, you know, having communication, having, you know, a Google group or some other sort of forum where people can post something. We've got people that are probably posting things on our message board right now about, hey, can you give me a ride? Can you do this? Can you do that? Can somebody bring an extension cord over or whatever? If it's something that's that, like, critical, maybe not, like, wait for someone to respond on that. Some of the stuff gets answered in, you know, 5 hours, 24 hours, you know.
The next time you guys have something contentious and weird come up on your public list, could you not move it to the private list? Because that is really useful for the rest of
us. Oh, really?
Yeah, there's one.
Well, then buy a membership, you get to read the private list.
Yeah. Was there a particular one?
There was one that just happened recently where, I don't know, somebody got way out of shape. Oh, somebody was lying and called me something.
Oh, there was a former member that was still on the list. We don't always remove people from the list when they, like, leave and, like, move away and stuff.
But it was really, I mean, and I'm being dead serious.
Yeah.
Here. Like, it was really useful and interesting as another makerspace organizer to see, like, how did the community handle that? Like, what did they
do?
Because it happens.
I think that particular case, and I remember he was our leatherworking champion for a while. So he would help bind books and, like, bring in scrap and other things. He had a bunch of, you know, tools and punches and whatever. And there's people that you'll recognize. I think there's kind of a honeymoon period with anybody, whether it's, you know, them introducing themselves to a new group or somebody meeting another person for the first time or working with a certain tool, whatever, where, you know, there's a bit of adjustment and learning and such. And some people are much more open to that than others. So there's people that come in, and we've had, anybody ever had any free energy folks come in over Unity? Anything? No, okay. There's some fun people that will show up, and they're know-it-alls, and they're used to being know-it-alls. It's kind of like the gifted student that got straight A's all through high school. They go to college, get an F. It grows. You get some character, you know? When you don't get what you want, you get experience. So we've had people that come in and immediately, like, everyone's going to adore me. I'm awesome.
Yeah.
And they get put in their place pretty quick, because for whatever they know, they might be, you know, the best, whatever, what they do, but there's like 15 other people that either also have an interest, whether it's passing or professional, or they have just a different slant on that, that they're the best at, or whatever. And one of my friends used to say, like, you know, why would you ever do something if you can't be the best? And it's like, well, that's kind of boring. Like, who's to say, to judge who's the best anyway? I'm not out to be, like, the best drill press user ever, but I've got a thing I want to do, and I need to use drill press. Okay. There are people that immediately latch onto that and go, oh, I see. I'm okay with that. Like, you know, I had my little period. I showed off. Maybe I was just trying to, you know, figure out, you know, where I fit in this group or whatever. And some people are really hung up on drama, really hung up on, you know, what others think of them. And then there's other people that just kind of go in, and if two people happen to be in the shop hanging out, they'll chat with them, and they'll have a good time, and they're all on the same footing. It goes also into the same thing with, you know your own skill level and know what you're comfortable doing. There are people come in and say, I know this lathe like the back of my hand, I've been doing it forever. And then, you know, they don't lock down the chuck or they leave the key in the chuck or something. And it's like, it's real obvious you don't. And people make mistakes. And I think in some of those cases, the people making mistakes show a lot more of their character than if things just went fine. Because, like, if somebody breaks a machine, do they post about it on the message boards? Do they tell someone right away? Or do they try to cover it up? Or, you know, things like that. And you learn more. We have plenty of people. I'd say once a month there's somebody that's like, I broke a drill bit. I was doing something on the router and it stopped working. I don't know why, but it's making this noise. And people will immediately fess up to it. And I'd like to think that's because they see other people fess up to it and how accommodating and forgiving people are in our group. Is they'll say, oh yeah, no, let me show you what you did wrong. Don't worry about it. You know, it's not like,
fix it.
It's not, yeah, we fix it. You learn more when you fix it. But we've also had people that are like vindictive about, you know, you touched my router, why would you do that, and all this other stuff. Well, maybe don't offer it up. You know, keep it in your locker if you're really that concerned about it. And that personality kind of weeds itself out. I mean, I'd like to say that, you know, there's a period of anywhere from like 1 to 6 weeks where if you don't get it after about 6 weeks, maybe there's a number of visits, maybe 5 visits or something, an outreach. If you haven't figured it out by then, you're not gonna fit in, you're not gonna enjoy yourself. So it's kind of self-regulating, but others not so much.
There was a makerspace that did a ban on the word, the idea behind the words well, actually. Did you hear about this?
No, but I can see that.
It's that kind of person that, you know, you do something and they're like, well, actually, the way you do that.
Yeah.
Well, actually. And so it's that whole concept of, you know, let me show you how to do that, or, you know, mansplain it.
Yeah.
But so
I've heard makersplain it.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Pete did that the other day.
So we, especially being the tinkerers and the hobbyists, we try and work hard on that. It doesn't always work, but
yeah.
To try and make sure that people, everybody's got skills, everybody's got gifts,
yeah.
Various different things. And I might be just, you know, the best thing since sliced bread on the lathe, but I have no idea how to sew or, you know, whatever it might be. So just trying to make, because then people don't feel welcome. They feel like, oh, I go there and people are trying to.
There's a level of customer service.
There's a culture shock of people who are used to being the smartest person in the room, and you walk into a makerspace, and I guarantee you aren't. suddenly there's people there who know a whole lot more than you about a whole lot more things. And there's a certain group of people, like Brant says, that aren't going to deal well with that, but the ones that do, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. And those are really the ones you want to try to attract and keep anyway. I mean, there's people that I think have... I don't know. I've kind of always been sort of, you know, loud and outgoing, and, you know, to share my interests with other people, and hopefully not be too off-putting or, you know, overwhelming. But there's people that we've got 2 signs up. Has anybody seen like how to care for introverts, how to care for extroverts? They're 2 different like color-coded things with like 10 little phrases like let them do this, let them do that, give them warning when you're going to change something or, you know, whatever, get buy-in and all. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of similarities. It's not like just somebody took the one sheet and like flipped it on its head for the next sheet. There's things that make sense, and some of them are just being considerate of others. I mean, it's that easy. It's, hey, if you're going to like, you know, everybody uses this one part of the shop and you're going to completely reorganize it, or you've got wall packs and wall transformers and you decide, I don't like cords, so I'm going to cut all the cords off of them. Which happened, not that I'm being too pissy about it, but somebody thought, I'm providing value, I'm making this better because I'm cleaning up a mess. And then all these people that maybe once a year grab a wall pack for something from this bin of wall packs we have go, well, these are useless to me now. I have to learn how to solder. I have to like put heat tubing on there and do all this other crap, and I don't know how to do that. And they gave up using the bin of stuff. So they basically rendered it useless. And they never once thought to ask somebody. So we kind of talked on this a little bit too. Next topic, where do your members store projects and materials? Is that what most of your space is used for? Do you use it for, like, you make stuff home every single night? Do you have lockers? Do you have shelves? Do you have a roof?
We have a tiny, Woodshop High School lockers, little square ones like that. And then we offer a little bit of shelf space if people can buy an extra one, but we just don't have a lot of floor space to do much more than that.
Shelves, sort of industrial, not industrial, but, you know, more heavy-duty shelves. Like, Bernard sells them about the cheapest way to get them. And it's a 2-foot deep, and so we set it, so it's 2 by 2 by 2. And then we have parking permits for bigger stuff, and we're terrible at following up on that, but we need to.
Is everybody familiar with the idea of parking permits, parking tickets, passes?
It's one of those things where you want another savant that likes to play that, and we've got one that, when she shows up, does a phenomenal job of maintaining parking permits.
I did it for a while, but then you
she comes and goes. And you hate, you're still holding that against us, aren't you?
So. But yeah, anyone else? Thoughts?
This is going kind of on the last one a little bit. What about, like, maintenance on machinery?
Something gets broken.
If something needs to be oiled or something like that, like, how do you guys go about doing
that? I'd say that's probably one of the biggest struggles we have, because we have so many people that are novice or amateurs. They don't understand. Even cleaning up. I think cleaning up is one of the biggest issues. That might be another thing down here further, but
As far as maintaining the tools, this is why I like the loan process, because the tool owner will usually, you know, do the monthly maintenance,
right,
or at least teach someone else and encourage someone to do it. But a lot of it goes undone.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is when something breaks, we pitch in and fix it, you know.
Yeah. We crowdfund tons of stuff. When the laser cutter goes down, we have a better thing in process now where our dues aren't actually $40, they're $35. But we take $5 and let you, through the Wild Apricot software, like, allocate that. Like, I want to throw $1 towards the paint room, which nobody does. Or laser cutters, or whatever. You know, like, all these different groups. We got, like, 20 groups that you can put money towards. So really, you know, you've got $5 that you can put towards whatever you want. And that helps us because, like, the first time one of our laser cutters went down, that was, like, $1,100 for a new lamp. And that sucked because people were like, this is the most popular tool here. We use it, you know.
Part of the reason we instituted this system was partially to give funding to the area champions so they didn't have to beg it from the board,
Yeah. But
also to let the members tell us which areas they wanted and which areas they supported.
Vote with your money.
Yeah, literally, vote with your money, and I think that helps us a lot when it comes time to decide which room do we have area for,
Yeah. Which
area do we have room for.
I mean, we can go to and look at it and say, like, somebody's like, oh, well, I want to build a huge pottery area with, like, 15 kilns, and it's like, nobody's put money towards that, or they have, but it doesn't support that. If you want more money, go put the effort.
You designate it once, and you can change it whenever you want, but it's automatic once you've got it in place.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's every month it
every
goes
month
to what you designated,
Yeah. Unless
I just change it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can log into Wild Apricot whenever you want, change it at will.
And if you don't have that software, which would be awesome, I'm just thinking, like, we could do that just kind of in our internal bookkeeping,
mm-hmm,
keep track of. So everybody fills out their form on how they want to spend their money,
mm-hmm,
and then we have to take that money and allocate it accordingly. Did you guys ever do the Wazer or Wasp?
I don't know.
Did you do crowdfunding for that? Does WaterJet?
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
We took a look at that and it backed off a bit on that one.
I think some people did it themselves,
Yeah. Or,
like, you know, individually, but yeah, it'd be awesome. But you know, some people aren't holding breath because they know how those things go.
Yeah,
delivery
dates a year and a half out for delivery of the first machines, so I don't think it makes sense to give them $5,000 and cross your fingers that in 2 years they'll give you something.
But if it does work, man, because that's like the next logical step. They did that with 3D printers, they did that with other, you know, equipment. It'd be great to be able to do that, you know, they've done that with industrial cutters, vinyl machines and other stuff. Water jets are the next machine that people want.
By the way, we're beta testing. Tormach has a baby mill, so it's 3D printer size. If anybody's interested in that, come and check that out on our site. It's just brand, you know, it's not really built as well as it should be, but it's their prototype.
Well, that's what you're supposed to figure out for them.
Exactly, so we're doing that, saying like, hey, this could be better. But if you're interested,
cool.
But same idea, you know, how to get 3D printer, where 3D printers are in every school. Now, what if there was a CNC mill in every school?
There'd be a lot of broken bits.
Did you have a question or something to add?
Me?
Yeah.
No,
sorry. Anybody else, how things are stored? That kind of goes right into the next question, too. I kind of feel like the room's going to be getting a little antsy. We've been in here a while. Do we want to try to speed this up just a little bit? Or?
I need to go.
You need to go? Okay,
yeah.
Appreciate you being here. I was going to say, there's a couple, like, feel-good questions in here, like, where do you set your space in 5 years and stuff like that. If you guys just want to have an open discussion, kind of finish up the last maybe 5-10 minutes, would that be preferred?
What do you guys want to know?
What questions
do you have? Okay, there we go.
Okay,
so, I don't have a space. We don't have a space yet. It's just the four
I'm
of
so
us.
Sorry
we meet
for
at the
you.
I know. I feel like the anyway. Our interest came from Destination Imagination, and those kids have just demolished my basement for the last 5 years in a row. And it would be nice, but the down in Illinois, everybody's so litigation happy, and everything is so expensive. We can't get the library to let us do much, and all of that kind of good stuff. But do any of you sponsor or allow groups like Boy Scouts, Destination Imagination teams to come and use the spaces where it's slightly more, you know, closed use at that point, where it's like, okay, you reserved the space for a 1 hour block.
Oh, so now other people.
Right, because now you're doing, now you've got a group of people,
yep,
maybe it's a class, something like that, but you've got a group of people that aren't in your normal demographic that are doing something specific.
We haven't, I don't think.
We've had similar stuff to that. We've had hosted Boy Scout or Girl Scout meetings.
We didn't tell the members don't come in at this time.
We've hosted 3D printer meetups and things like that. We warned the membership that there's going to be a bunch of strangers in the building. It might be hard to get projects done.
Yeah.
But we've never told members you can't come in because someone else has the space.
Well, and your space is big enough that you could have 10 kids and you still have plenty of
space. Yeah, if you've got one main room and that's your space, obviously a group shows up that, you know, they're going to consume it, so.
That's really our challenge right now, because we, like on Monday nights, we have 3 robotics teams going at the same time, and it's a small space, and it's loud. I mean, these are middle schoolers and grade schoolers, so. But that's why we've really struggled. Can we open to membership, which we have not yet? Mm-hmm. Can we open as a tinker shop, where it's kind of a, you know, pay by the project type of thing, or, you know, are we hosting Destination Imagination or robotics or Goldberg teams or anything like that? The thing is that the teams don't sustain the place financially. They don't. So it's icing on the cake that may make us more attractive if we're writing grants or trying to attract sponsors, but it's not a sustainable thing all on its own. And it's also very time and resource intensive. They take up a lot of space and tools and mentor time. But I feel like we gotta have it. It's enjoyable, for one thing.
The Appleton Makerspace doesn't do have a pattern for that. We've done school groups will get a volunteer or two to take a school group through midday or something. But I know Madison Sector 67, if you just talk to Chris, I know he hosts some first robotics groups, and I believe he's got a pattern, but I think it's not so much a money funnel, it's a community, being active in the community to get the word out, sort of activity for him.
There is a group, School Factory and Space Federation, which are affiliated with, I first met them all through Bucket Works, which is a group here in Milwaukee. I'm not sure where they're at the moment, if they're even still around. They had some groups that basically would help you. They'd operate as a nonprofit for your group. So you had to meet certain criteria and, you know, discuss things with them and fill out paperwork and such. But basically we were affiliated with them for a while. I guess technically we still are, even though we got our own nonprofit status. But they would do your paperwork for you. They would manage donations and they would help you with that stuff. And their goal was basically, what's that?
4 feet.
Yeah, 4 feet. So
not a big one, but a fee.
It was a reasonable fee. I mean, I forget exactly what we paid, but it made sense for the size of the group we were at the time, and it did help out a little bit. I don't know, I think the Kuka was the only thing that ever maybe even went through that.
There were 3 or 4 donations that went through
that.
They didn't charge us for in-kind, they only charged us for cash donations.
Yeah, so if somebody donates materials, they donate a thing to you, they don't take any kind of that.
Yeah, they just give them the tax receipt.
It's kind of an ecosystem, though. I mean, I know Madison has a couple of fab labs located in schools, and then in Appleton, the technical college has a fab lab, and they have students go through out there all the time. But that's how they're set up. They're set up as almost a training space for kids.
Yeah.
So it's part of a larger ecosystem of teaching kids how to do it, and then
graduate
to a larger space.
I think the one thing that sets Milwaukee Makerspace separate from some other groups is that we've kind of been, like, privately funded. I mean, for better or worse. And we've had a lot of members that said, yeah, we want to throw money at this. We believe in it. We see where it's going to go. And we want to do that. If you don't do that with other groups, you know, you've got to get the funding other ways, whether that's through grants, whether that's through donations from industry or businesses in your area. If you can be part of a school and they've got, like, just a classroom or some room they can give you to use, whether it's officially yours and you have keys or whether they just let you in a certain time of the day. I mean, but there's different avenues. Is anybody here, you talk about grant writing, that's something we haven't had to do much at Makerspace, and I'm kind of, you know, we haven't had to do it because I know it is a lot of work. There's people that's what they do for a living. Has anybody else gone after grants or tried to get certain things for projects?
Yeah, Mick Appleton has done, I think there's a grant you can get from the power company, internet service providers. There's a person, a member who is active in assistive technologies and has a passion apparently for grant writing, so he's looking at getting us a Google Apps account for $9, and so we're looking at things.
Yeah.
By the way, I was just going to say, Bucket Works were very nice to us and helped us out. We never ended up using them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we did file a 501c3 EZ. Could not have been easier. Four pages, took like a week and a half to get approved, and super simple. If you all, any of you want our bylaws to look at, to steal, or articles of incorporation, or whatever you want, just let us know. I mean, Milwaukee's been very generous with us. They let us steal parts of their wiki, all kinds of stuff.
We have an annual report we have to submit every year.
It's on our website, let us know.
There's a second.
It was nice to meet you guys, and please.
Thank you for
the visit, and I'll hope to see all your spaces.
I was say, I think we're about out of time, probably. Does anybody have anything they'd like to add?
One quick thing. Was there someone trying to organize, and I thought I was contacted by Appleton, that somebody trying to organize sort of a Wisconsin-ish forum similar to this, but kind of online or something?
I heard murmurings as well, but I don't recall.
Somebody reached out, and I responded, but there was no response after, and I'm not sure if it happened, but I don't think it was me. I think trying to maintain it would be the hard part.
Yeah.
Who's going to do it?
Is everybody aware of like hackerspaces.org? It's still a pretty good clearinghouse for just different spaces, whether they're planned or starting or going to start or whatever, or dead. And then also, was it makerspaces.org by Make Magazine? They've actually got a pretty decent forum. Is anybody already a member of that? I think it's in beta, but they've got show off your projects and events and do this or do that. And their moderators are really helpful. They'll help promote stuff and whatever. They're just kind of friendly. So. All right. Well, thank you guys. We can pass the sheet. I think you've got sign-up sheets.
Where are the sign-up sheets?
Appreciate it. Thank you all for coming.